And the two problems that me and Isabel, my co-founder, always talk about are who gets to be a founder and who writes those checks. So on who gets to be a founder, this narrow myopic focus on white men who live in coastal cities below the ages of 45, basically. And we know as people who build products and build markets that there are more opportunity and more market opportunity outside of those set of problems that most VCs aren't focused on. And then on the other side, most VCs have an amazing finance background or even sometimes are amazing founders, but they don't have tactical experience in building product. And the number one reason most startups fail is never getting to product market fit. And a lot of people don't even really understand product market fit because it's the annoying phrase about product market fit is you know it when you get there. Basically, when your sales team is overwhelmed and your product's doing great, that doesn't really help you understand and get there. It's just like, great, so I just do a bunch of stuff until I get there.
Welcome to How Women Inspire, where women lead, invest, and give. I'm your host, Julie Castro Abrams, founder and CEO of How Women Lead and managing partner of the venture firm How Women Invest. Feminist, social justice warrior, mother, friend of 50,000 plus badass women, and an expert at helping top executive women get on boards and break down barriers for women entrepreneurs, investors, and social impact activists. In this podcast, we interview women influencers and leaders from across the globe who are in the C-suite, founding companies, investing, and agents of change. We'll share stories of how women lead. We'll provide insights and data, tips you can put into action, and get to know the women who have fiercely and unabashedly stepped into their power in leadership and opened doors for other women like you. We discuss topics ranging from the journey of getting a board seat, how we can counter cultural frameworks that change the way the world views women leaders, what we're doing to close the gender funding gap and driving equity for women in all aspects of life and career. My goal is that after every episode, you walk away feeling inspired, unstoppable, ready to level up and step into your power and influence. I want to break down the cultural narratives that hold us back collectively and those messy messages you heard that are taking up way too much of your brain space. I want you to know you're invited in, because I know that together we can change the culture, change opportunities, and create the future we want for our daughters and sisters and friends. This is our time. Are you in? Welcome to How Women Inspire. Today's guest is a dynamic leader who's transitioned from being a successful product leader to an influential investor. And I hope this gives you some inspiration for your own journey. As one of the founding partners at Seed to Harvest Ventures, she plays a really crucial role in supporting women of color as they venture into the world of software-enabled businesses during the pre-seed and seed stages. And boy, is it important to have a really experienced venture capital by your side during these growth stages. Her expertise in building products and assembling high-performing teams really is considered unparalleled. And she has demonstrated her skills across four early-stage startups. So she has done it. And we are also lucky that she's helping other people figure out how to show up in the world and really build great companies. Part of her background, when you look at it, is she has offered super valuable insights as a consultant to companies like Goldman Sachs and NBC at the Today Show for their app. And she's really the big contributor to innovative new products. And her passion for empowering startups and her advisory support for early stage ventures has literally resulted in $37 million before Series A funding rounds. She went to Stanford and she calls Brooklyn, New York home. Except when the cold sets in. You can find her, I think, on the beach on occasion. She despises the cold, but remains fervently dedicated to her mission in the world of entrepreneurship and investment. Victoria Kennedy, I'm so excited to spend time with you today.
That was such a fun intro. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you are absolutely amazing. And I have to tell you, my daughter's been doing some product work and I'm just like, oh my God, I want her to hear about your journey and how you have really scaffolded. But before we get into all of that, can you tell me sort of, do you have a song that's your celebration song or your I Gotta Get Lifted Up song?
So I actually have a whole playlist that I've built over this past year because fundraising is, you know, hard. But one of my favorite songs, it's funny because like this person is not like my favorite person, but it's a Kanye West song, All of the Lights. It just has this like, you feel like you're on stage, like in front of like 30,000 people feeling that feeling. And like, it's great because it's both uplifting when you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's also like really great when you just get to feel that moment. I also was like a dancer growing up and I'm definitely a performer. So musical theater head. So like anything where I feel like I'm on stage, like makes me just like feel really embodied and really powerful.
This is something I didn't know about you. And it makes a lot of sense now that you say that. We actually, now I want everybody to lean into this, especially people who are trying to transition in their careers. Can you talk about how you transitioned from being a product leader to an investor? It seems like a bit of a leap in some ways, but if you know venture investing, like, is a perfect background.
Yeah. So what's interesting is like, I am a kind of sink or swim, learn, jump in the pool kind of person. And so I definitely didn't get asked to do this. I more just decided I was going to do this and have a specialty in figuring my way into things and into situations and connecting with people and using those connections to kind of build. And so for me, how I kind of got started, my background, as you mentioned earlier, has been really early stage product development. Specifically, how do you go from idea to product market fit? So that is the hardest part. Someone has an idea and they want to build for a customer. People spend millions of dollars trying to get to MVP. I've seen founders do it and waste a lot of money and time. And that's kind of where I live and where I dedicated my career. But across industries, start off in gaming, as you mentioned, went to like e-commerce, and I've consulted on new product development for media and like fintech and all of the above. But like the key problem I was trying to solve is like, what is that first customer problem we're trying to solve, who that customer is, and how do we solve it well enough to get to product market fit. And so throughout my career in 2017, actually, I joined a program that First Round Capital was doing, and it was like a product masterclass. It's supposed to be this kind of masterclass for mid-level to senior-level product managers in New York City with the idea that they would most likely turn into founders. Actually, a lot of people from my cohort did. They're amazing. I've done amazing work, but I got more interested in the venture side. And so their team is amazing. And I basically asked to come to events. Like when I would be in SF, like they would let me go to their founder conferences and meet with investors. So I started kind of getting really interested in how investing works, then started doing kind of my own investing, mostly actually through crowdfunding to start with, just to kind of understand the process and start thinking about like, what is now what I call my thesis about the time, like just what do I want to invest in? And then, you know, 2020, we all had a lot of time on our hands to think.
I know, right? The pivot.
Yes. Big time to pivot. And I'd been talking to investors and talking to founders. I started like my own like kind of research project with like Black founders, because, you know, everyone knows statistics around it. Basically less than 2% of venture capital goes to anyone who's not a white man. And I've spent my career working mostly for venture-backed companies and seeing problems there. And the two problems that me and Isabel, my co-founder, always talk about are who gets to be a founder and who writes those checks. So on who gets to be a founder, this narrow myopic focus on white men who live in coastal cities below the ages of 45, basically. And we know as people who build products and build markets that there are more opportunity and more market opportunity outside of those set of problems that most VCs aren't focused on. And then on the other side, most VCs have an amazing finance background, or even sometimes are amazing founders, but they don't have tactical experience in building product. And the number one reason most startups fail is never getting to product market fit. And a lot of people don't even really understand product market fit, because it's the annoying phrase about product market fit is you know it when you get there. Basically, when your sales team is overwhelmed and your product's doing great, but that doesn't really help you understand and get there. It's just like, great, so I just do a bunch of stuff until I get there. And that's something we've done over and over again. And so for us, it was a really big like insight. Like there's this huge market opportunity to invest in different types of founders that most VCs aren't looking at. And there's a skill set that is really valuable to founders that most VCs have that we have and we could actually use. And so that's really where Seed to Harvest kind of came from, is like looking back at our career and seeing what we saw as issues in the tech and VC space. And then seeing those holes once we talked to founders, started working with founders. I've like advised for Techstars New York and Techstars Oakland, now Silicon Valley, as well as Visible Hands as a product advisor. Even most accelerators, right? They don't have product as a part of their curriculum. It's about fundraising, which is amazing because there used to be a lot of issues with fundraising for founders and still is. But again, product isn't a focus area, but it's really something that makes people stand out and make sure that they get to those later stages.
Oh, yeah. I literally was just on a call with a portfolio company talking exactly about product market fit because they have a new product and they got to get back to the basics. So you just said something that's really important, and you were talking about underinvestment in a certain type of founder. And what's your thesis around, is there big upside potential for people? Is something nice to do? Like it's being philanthropic? Tell me how we can make money.
Yeah. So a big thing we talk about is with Seed to Harvest, like this is like a big part of like a larger plan is in our mission. And like two of us is really around like, how do we create the tech and venture ecosystem we wish we could have worked in? Mm-hmm. And what's really obvious to us and what we talk about a lot in terms of like the returns, when we actually first started thinking about Seed to Harvest, we were focused on kind of all underrepresented founders. Remember, it was like big focus on white male founders. But as we did our research, we realized that women of color are the largest group of emerging founders. Women in general deliver about a 35% higher ROI. And the changing demographics of the globe mean that women of color will be the consumer majority, the next billion consumers globally. But tech is largely not building for that at all. So there's these great headwinds in terms of the types of founders, the types of ROI that you can get on the investment dollars that you actually give to them, and building for the future generations that will be absorbing using this technology, not to mention just even the way women of color build companies around building a profitable business, not just focus on attracting users until someone gives us enough money and maybe one day they'll figure out how to make it a business, right? All these things investors are talking about now wanting instead of just growth at all costs, really building good business fundamentals, women of color have. But again, they continue to be overlooked. So when we think about the potential, we're like, hey, here's a group of people who know how to build for their future, who are building sustainable, enduring businesses, and they have lower valuations, which means you kind of get a discount as an investor, yeah, right? So like there's a huge upside to doing this that most people aren't willing to do because quite frankly, there's a lot of limiting beliefs around what women of color are capable of. So we use that to our advantage. We're able to use our product expertise to find really great founders of all races, but we focus on women of color. They have to be 50% of the founder cap table. And we're using our product skills to ensure that they win. And that's what most investors do. You make a bet, but you do everything you can ensure that they win, right? Because it's not exactly all up to the founder, right? You have to make sure you have the right ecosystem to make sure they can feed into their growth stage, funding stages, that they have the right networks, they have the right skills to succeed. And that's a big part of what we're doing for a product landscape. And so that's really the returns we're looking for. And something that's Because you were talking about your daughter early in product. We've actually had a lot of like operators, like product people, other designers and engineers come to us being like, I really am curious about investing and I want to do it, but I'm not sure how to get into it. And I met this woman. I was in Chicago for the Capital Summit. I haven't been in Chicago East for a while. And I was giving a talk about kind of product-led growth and like exits for founders and how those correlate. And I was talking to a woman. She was like, you know what? I spent years angel investing. And what I should have been doing is investing in funds. And I was like, wow, can I put you on a billboard? But what we're realizing is like, there's so much push for people to get into investing with angel. But like most of the time, building a solid angel portfolio is really hard. Most people aren't able to do it. You can invest in 20 different companies on your own, but like the time it takes to do that due diligence, the money it takes to do that due diligence, like you can invest in one or two or however many funds, I don't know, whatever your bank account allows for, your finances allow for, you get way more of a breadth of portfolio and the ability to actually make the kind of returns that people want to be able to make from angel investments with less significant time on your end. And so that's a big thing we've been pushing for now is like finding operators who are interested in, you know, investing and maybe building funds and being like, learn with us, invest in us, see our companies, help them grow, right? Because like, you know, we're early stage expertise, right? But like, if we do our job well, they get to Series A and beyond. And so we want to have operators in our network who've worked at the Googles, who've worked at the large organizations, who can help them get to those later stages, but also have the connections to get them to those later stages, right? And that's the kind of network we want to build that's beneficial for everyone involved. And we think about that also with like women of color, as well as LPs and getting more diversification and that top layer of funding that we really think will help diversify fund managers, which only helps diversify the amount of founders. And So it's kind of like that kind of ecosystem building is what we think about a lot. And like skills, like we really focus on like, how can we be value add in every interaction? Because I think, unfortunately, what's been so hard for founders is money isn't enough. It's great if you can write the check. The check is very important, right? Like we know that as fund managers, the check is really important. But like, can you actually help me get to the next milestone? Can you help me not make the same mistakes most founders make and spend $1 million that I didn't need to on a product no one actually wants to build, right? can you help me avoid those mistakes and succeed long term? That's what good founders are looking for. And like, that's where we're positioning ourselves to add that unique value every time.
I can imagine what lucky is anyone who gets you by their side. That is, you know, one sort of a small funnel almost. Mm-hmm. And I think about, you know, you were talking about women of color, not only running companies, but also being LPs and building this ecosystem, because this is the thing we know. It's like, it's great to get someone started with some money, but for women, you know, they call it the Series B cliff. The bias is in every part of the system. And so talk about what's the opportunity and benefit of somebody being an LP in a venture fund.
Yeah. So we talked about a little bit earlier. One, there's like kind of the pros and cons on both sides. And I think the biggest thing is how you want to spend your time and how does that align with your values? So how I think about it is, if you are somebody who's looking to invest both to be values aligned and for returns, finding an experienced investor or finding someone who is able to act on your kind of internal like thesis, I would say, sorry, I mean like VC land. So like, so if your values are aligned with like, I want to support women-owned businesses and I want to invest in women-owned businesses, but I also want to make money, you as a person with a full-time job doing something else, like that's most likely not the best use of your time to have to go out and find these companies, to go out and do diligence them, make sure that they are doing what they say they're doing, that their finances are in place, that they have the right investment team around them to do all the paperwork, you know, like that's a full-time job. That's my job, right? Like that's somebody's full-time job. Just like you have a private wealth manager. We talk about this all the time, people. It's like, it's great that there's things like Robinhood out there, but that's for a certain type of investor who want to be actively involved. And that's, if that's what you want to do, angel investing is great, right? But for the people who want to make a return and be values aligned, but don't have the time or energy or want to actually go out and do that work, just like you hire a private wealth manager, you kind of hire a VC, you hire firms to enact like thesis that you think is going to win, and you diligence them to make sure that they're going to do that work. And then you let them do the day-to-day work to make sure you get your returns.
Right. Well, and when you think about most women, you know, not only were you working, but we're also managing, doing more at home. And so time is a premium. I would actually also add to that, like you don't have the power and the leverage if you aren't a VC either. As an angel, you get diluted pretty quickly. And so unless you can keep putting in additional amounts of money that are significant and you really have the time to bring all that value to the founders, I think that's tough. You know, it's interesting. We did research last year on the investing behavior of women and men, and Black women were unique in taking more risk as investors, smart, responsible risk, but not being shy, not being scared. And, you know, I think that that's interesting because I think we all sort of, we have assumptions about who will take real risks. And it doesn't seem like Black women are always as a collective in a position to take more risks, but that's definitely what we're seeing. Do you have a thesis about why? Why do you think Black women are sticking their necks out and investing more effectively and more with a little bit more risk tolerance?
I think it's kind of, it's almost out of necessity. Like I'll speak for myself, right? Like deciding to build a venture firm is a very risky thing to do. But for me, it was balancing out like, okay, this is a big risk, but there's also a very big financial reward that's possible here. But also, like, I've done the kind of, like, quote-unquote normal ways of progressing my career. And honestly, I was at the point, if I was like, if I work for one more incompetent, mediocre white man, I'm going to lose my shit. Like,
like
seeing people who, thinking back to Michelle Obama's book when she was talking about, I've been in the room with leaders. They're not that smart, right? It's like, you see how the world works and you see that, like, there are people who have less skill and less ingenuity but just have the right connections. It's like, okay, like if I want the life that I actually want to live, I need to do something different. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly for Black women, if you think about whether it's social activism, where you think about like community building, even think about with our founders, right? Like a lot of people are like, as you kind of hinted to towards earlier, like because we invest in women of color, they're like, oh, this is like impact. This is like, you know, like, no, we're not an impact fund. Like we hope to make great impact with our work, but we are not an impact fund. We don't want to burden these women who are already building really, a really hard thing with like specific metrics that they have to meet when they're already like a woman of color owned business. But they all think about community, right? Like we have a company in our pipeline who's focused on like, how do we increase the wealth of high net worth Chinese like immigrants and giving them investment products? We have another company that's thinking about how do we help build up the wealth of expecting mothers and help their village, help them through both monetarily and the resources through pregnancy, through like early childhood, right? but they're building businesses. And so those things don't have to be in competition with each other, but I think it comes naturally. And I say naturally, not like genetically, but naturally because of the position women of color have been put in society, particularly Black women, to have to think about knowing that their community, if their community succeeds, they succeed.
Yep.
And so knowing that the work that they need to do needs to bring that forward and knowing that it's risky to do so. Like my business partner is white, and we talk a lot about like how our success inherently pushes on a lot of narratives around what women of color are capable of, what's a good investment. And like, in some ways, people don't necessarily want us to win, right? Even if they think we're smart and capable and they think we actually can do what we can do, to have your beliefs about what's possible challenge is usually scary for most people. And so all that's to say is I think just like because of the kind of pressure cooker Black women have had to be in living in this world, particularly in the US, it kind of puts us in a position to either like say like, you know, for lack of a phrase, like it, let's do it, or like, you know, kind of go through the past. But like what I've seen time and time again, and this has been, and this is what I love about like the work that you're doing and like why we're part of the New Table campaign and why I've been just like so able to move so fast and like what we're doing is like the incredible network of women that we have encountered and who are just ready and willing to like get things done and the kind of focus on getting things tactically done and helping people. I think it's just so prevalent with women of color, particularly Black women. And I think that riskiness knows that like, if you don't take that risk, you're not going to get the reward and no one else is going to take the risk for you. Yeah. You have to take the risk on yourself and the people who enter your community.
Well, and to me, I see it as such a power play. If you want to be a power player, you have to participate in this asset class and you need to understand it. And I feel like I want every Black Women's Association, the Association of Black General Counsels, like all of these organizations, I want all of them to get it in their bones and make sure all of their community understands what they're leaving on the table and what the opportunities are beyond wealth building, because you then get to be along for the ride and see the, you know, the cultures and the employees of the future. So sorry, I'm like tagging on my soapbox.
We talk about this a lot, and I've talked about this with other women of color, like fund managers. The biggest lesson I've probably learned over the last year is that wealth is so much more than about the actual money, but the knowledge and the connections, it get you the money, right? Like there's so much I've learned about financial products, about like how you use different financial products to build wealth, to preserve wealth, to avoid pain. Like there's so much there that is only accessible by a few people and it is kind of like gated information that if you can connect people with that, there's mountains you can move doing that. And so like, I think about that a lot. And we talk about that. Even when we talk to product people, we're like, hey, if you want to one day be a founder, one day build like a fund, this is like how you do it. Why spend all this money building out your own track record and then building up another like fund and all the legal fees, right? Learn and grow with us, better your career, make yourself even more valuable to potential future work opportunities and understanding that ecosystem. So if you want to be a founder, you know how those deal terms work. If you want to work for another company, you understand how those work. You have the connections with other firms. Like this is how you not just build your portfolio and your like financial wealth, but this is how you put your knowledge to grow your career and make it what you actually want it to be instead of what you think it can be.
I love it. So big financial upside, a huge new market opportunity that is evolving and very interesting. And to me, you're movement building. I mean, you're doing so much more than also building great companies. If you had advice or wisdom that you want to share with this audience that is 50% women of color, what would you say to them? What do you want them to hear from you?
The kind of overarching thing is like really challenge what you think is possible, especially if it's based on what other people say is possible.
Yes.
So like, honestly, like it's to your point, like so many people come up to me and they're like, how did you build this fund? I'm like, one is like, there's no 1-2-3 step process. It's like kind of crazy, but like, I just did it. Like Isabel and I just did it. We figured it out. And like, there's no real barriers. I mean, real barriers in terms of like, you don't have to like go take a test or like get a certificate or anything like that. You have to build the network. You have to fundraise the money. Like it is very hard. Let's be clear, but there's no like legal or like whatever gates that makes a thing. It's really the narrative around. I think we talked about this in the past. I remember there was a woman who I think, you interviewed her. She was like a Google counsel. She had actually advised VCs, but had never been LP in a fund. I tell this story all the time because it's like, she was like in the circle and didn't think it was possible for her to be an LP. And so it's like, just if you want to do something, you are capable of doing it. And it's just finding the information. And like, I'm more than happy to be a resource. Like, we have a whole podcast where we just share as much information as we possibly can, because we never want information gating to be the reason people don't build wealth or build the careers that they want to build.
The confidence, right? To just step forward, make it happen. Okay. Where can people hear your podcast and where can they find you?
So we're on Spotify. It's called Adventures in Funland. I named it because I'm corny. So that's like our podcast. And we're about to start the next season of it soon, in the next month or so. So there'll be new episodes coming out, but there's at least like 13 plus episodes already there. On LinkedIn, we're at Seed to Harvest Ventures. On Instagram, we're at STH Ventures. And those are the best ways to reach us.
Victoria, you give me so much hope. You make me feel, no, I'm really serious. And I don't want to sound condescending at all, but I might be a couple years older than you are. And I'm like looking at how smart you are, how fierce, how disciplined and courageous. Like, you were like, hey, I'm going to make this happen. And it is hard to do for everybody, especially in an environment like this. So thank you for your courage and your hard work and for the values that you bring to the table. I'm hearing you fiercely supporting these entrepreneurs in all kinds of ways and just doing it with respect. And to me, there's nothing more important. So thank you. And I can't wait to partner even more with you. And everybody who's listening to this, I hope that you really are thinking about what role can you play in this ecosystem, and think about 5 to 10 friends that you can have a conversation with and say, listen, I want you to hear Victoria in this podcast, because I want you to think about what's possible for us. What can we get, like, get out of our own way, move beyond the, you know, what everybody else has said was possible or not possible for us, and let's leap into the future. You are the future of venture and building the companies we want to see. I want my kids to be able to work at your companies that you've helped to advise and support. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for everything that you're doing in this world.
Thank you so much. And just like a little adder to that, like I was reading a book recently and it talked about empowering. And I think sometimes when you hear the message of like, just do it, you're like, it feels kind of like people just think it's easy. I say that knowing fully well how hard it is. I'm saying use the power and the strength and the skills you already have to do the thing you want to do. We spent the first 6 months trying to be like finance girls and like whatever, but our strength is that we're product people. Like, that's somebody else's job. Like, it is part of our job because it's our fun, right? But like, our strength is being like, this is how you build product, which not other VCs can do. So I'm saying when you want to come to this, I say just do it, but do it from like what's already inside of you, not trying to be what you think someone else says you have to be in order to do the thing.
That's like a mic drop moment. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day and check out her podcast as well as Seed to Harvest. It could be the right next move for you.
And with that, I want to thank you all for listening to today's episode of How Women Inspire. And because your inspiration should not stop when this podcast ends, head over to our website, howwomenlead.com. Follow us on LinkedIn at How Women Lead and subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast app to find out how you can proactively take charge and step into your power through our workshops and activism. In our loving network, we want to propel you. See you next time, ladies. And remember to be unabashedly visible.